So, Jayam Vishnupad, Paramahansa Paravatacharya, also Teta Sitashi, Shimad, His Divine Grace, Sabaya Chananad, Bhaktivedanta Goswami, Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai, ISKCON Founder Acharya, Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai, Anantakoti Vaishnava Vrinda Ki Jai, Namacharya, Srila Haridas Thakur Ki Jai, Prem Se Kaho Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shidwaita Gadadha Shri Vasadi Gaur Bhaktavinoda Ki Jai Shri Shri Radha Krishna Gopi Govardhana Swayam Kunda Radha Kunda Giri Govardhan Ki Jai Vrindavanam Ki Jai Mathuradam Ki Jai Jagadadasami Ki Jai Yamunamayi Ki Jai Shrimati Lalasi Devi Ki Jai Samaveda Bhakta Vrinda Ki Jai Gaur Premananda Hari Hari Bol. All glorious the assembled devotees, all glorious the assembled devotees, all glorious the assembled devotees, all glorious to Shri Guru and Gauranga, Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai, Gaur Premananda Hari Hari Bol. Namo Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Vasudevaya Bhutale Srimati Bhaktivedanta Swamini Namini Namaste Saraswati Devi Gaur Vani Pachari Nivashesha Shunyavadi. Paschacha Deja Tarni, so Omaganatam Miranda Shaganan Jana Shlakaya, Chakshuran Miritam Yena Tasmai Shigurave Namaha. I offer my respectful obeisances unto the lotus feet of my spiritual master, His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada, who so kindly opened my eyes with the torchlight of knowledge while I was blinded in the darkness of ignorance. So today, as I promised everybody, we're going to do an overview of the Mahabharata, not specifically the stories, but to actually talk about the Mahabharata book or books and the different parvas and where each and every story occurs within the different chapters or parvas of the Mahabharata. And I thought this was quite interesting since we went through the stories yesterday. Of course, we'll reference the stories, but we're not going to really tell so much of the stories today. So those of you who know the stories from the Mahabharata will be able to remember the stories as we go through the different sections of the Mahabharata. So we have a slideshow to help you with this. And the slideshow is called, obviously, the Mahabharata Summarized. So we're going to start it right now. It's called the Mahabharata Summarized. Let me clear my screen. Okay, good. And so we're going to get an overview of this massive work. Of course, the Mahabharata and the Ramayana are called itihasas. Itihasa means thus it happened or history. So they are histories. And the Mahabharata is far larger than the Ramayana is. Something like 4 or 8 times larger than the Ramayana. But the Ramayana is the world's largest epic poem. The Mahabharata is not all in poetry format. Okay, so now here, let's go ahead. And as I mentioned, it's the longest epic in the world. There's 100,000 two-line stanzas, 8 times as long as the Iliad and the Odyssey combined. And for those of you who don't know what the Iliad and the Odyssey is, that's okay. It's not really that important. Well, it is important if you're in the Western world. But it's considered to be one of the main epics, well, in the Western world. And there's 18 parvas or books of the Mahabharata. All right, go ahead. Whoops. So, Mahabharata, or at least the story of the Mahabharata, occurred around 3,129 B.C. Here it says A.D., which is completely wrong. A.D. would be right in the future. I didn't notice this one. So, there's astronomical evidence described in the Mahabharata, such as astronomical means like the stars, the moon, eclipses and things like that that are corroborated by modern science utilizing computers that go back and look at the sky the way it was about 5,000 years ago. So this is actually really important. That's how we know exact dates of the Mahabharata, because of the astrological, astronomical evidence, which is described elaborately in the Mahabharata itself. So let's start with the first parva, or first book. And in this first book, there are going to be many things we talked about before, which is Mahavish, who was in the heavenly planets, becoming Shantanu because he lusts after Gangadevi. Gangadevi comes down, marries Shantanu. Bhishma is born as their eighth son after Gangadevi kills the other seven, because they have this prenuptial agreement that Shantanu will not disagree with Gangadevi. Then Bhishma arranges the marriages of Satyavati with the marriage of Satyavati, it's not plural, with Shantanu, his father, because father was in love with Satyavati, who is actually apparently a fisher man's daughter, but actually she was the daughter of a great king named Vasu, but that's a different story. And then they have two kids. In the meantime, Bhishma renounces his claim to the throne and renounces his ability to get married so that the son or sons of Satyavati can become the next kings, which doesn't really happen because she has two sons named Chitrangada and Vichitravirya. And Vichitravirya, well, Chitrangada dies because he's killed by a Gandharva. Vichitravirya gets married to these two girls, which we mentioned before, Ambika and Ambalika. He doesn't marry Amba because Amba vows to kill Bhishma. And he dies. Vichitravirya dies, and it's a big problem. So, Vichitravirya dies, and after he dies, Vyasadeva is called to have a kid or kids with Ambika and Ambalika, and therefore Dhritarashtra and Pandu are born. And later on, Vyasadeva has a kid with a maidservant, and therefore Vidura is born. Vidura is actually Yamaraj, who has been cursed because he made a bad mistake. And what was his bad mistake? He actually sentenced sage to be pierced with a lance, because when this sage was very young, this sage pierced an insect with a piece of grass. And so that was the sage's punishment. To be pierced with a lance. The king sentenced the sage to have that done. It was Yamaraj who arranged it, but the king who sentenced it, because there were dacoits hiding in the sage's ashram. And then what happened was that this sage, he remained alive in spite of having a lance through his body. And they tried to remove the lance. They couldn't, so they had to break it off. So the sage was known as the sage with a lance in his body. And therefore what? Therefore, he got very angry at Yamaraj for doing that to him because of a simple mistake he made when he was a kid. And then he cursed Yamaraj to be born as a Shudra. And that's why Yamaraj was born as Vidura. But the real reason Yamaraj was born as Vidura was because Yamaraj wanted to do some good preaching. And Vidura got a chance to do a lot of good preaching. So Dhritarashtra marries Gandhari and Pandu marries Kunti. And all this is in the Adi Parva. There's more in the Adi Parva too. Madri, the second wife of Pandu, marries him. Pandu has a hunting accident and takes Vanaprastha because he can't really approach his wives for sex or anything. And therefore, he arranges that Yamaraj is called so that his wife can give birth to Yudhisthira. And of course, later on, he arranges for his wife to give birth, Kunti, to give birth to Bhima, and then Arjuna, and Nakula, and Sahadev through different demigods. And Gandhari gives a birth to a lump of flesh. Bhima and Duryodhana are born at the same time, but Yudhisthira is older, so he is going to be the next king. I mean, that's the law of primogeniture. So let's see, the Pandavas take birth from the demigods, Pandu dies, and the Pandavas return to Hastinapur, and there's so many attempts on the Pandavas' lives. And then Dronacharya becomes the guru of the Pandavas. We discussed this before. And as part of the guru dakshin, after the Pandavas graduate and the Kurus graduate, they attempt to defeat Drupada. The Kurus are not able to defeat Drupada, but the Pandavas are. And half of the kingdom is taken away from Drupada. And the other half is actually kept by Dronacharya and his son Ashwatthama. And Karna, who was the son of Kunti from before her marriage, Kunti and the sun god, appears somehow or other and challenges the Pandavas. And the Kuru dynasty, headed up by Duryodhana, wants the Pandavas to be challenged by this personality who's apparently born in a Shudra family because he was found by a Shudra man and a woman. So Duryodhana gives Karna a kingdom, kingdom of Anga. So therefore, Karna becomes qualified to challenge the Pandavas. This is all happening in the Adi Parva. Then Drupada, getting very angry because he lost half his kingdom, performs a fire sacrifice and gets his son Drishtadyumna, who is meant to kill Drona and Draupadi, from the fire. Then there's many attempts to kill the Pandavas, culminating in the attempt to burn them in a house made of flammable material. And when they're in hiding after the burning of the house, Bhima kills this demon Vakasura, kills Hidimba and marries Hidimba. And then they have a kid named Ghatotkach. Then Bhima kills Avakasura, which is a demon in Ekachakra. Then Arjuna wins Draupadi at the Swayamvara. Then the Pandavas come back and they divide the kingdom with the Kurus and they get Indraprast. They burn the forest there. They win the help of Maya Dhanava and able to erect a giant, beautiful, mystic castle. Whew. And during that time, Arjuna has to go in exile. Whoops, sorry about that. We missed this. Arjuna has to go to that on exile because he's intruded upon Yudhisthira, who was with Draupadi, who was their common wife. And that was the deal. If he intruded upon them, he would have to go into exile for a number of years. And actually, he intruded upon them to get his weapons because someone else was trying to steal the cows. So while he's in exile, he marries Ulupi and Chachangada. And that's in Manipur and also in the Serpent Kingdom. So then he finally arrives in Dwarka and he kidnaps Subhadra, who was originally supposed to marry Duryodhana, and comes back and there's an arrangement for this demon Jarasandha to be killed before Yudhisthira performs the Rajasuya sacrifice. And all this is in the Adi Parva. Then there's Sabha Parva. This is the Rajasuya sacrifice, which means that Yudhisthira becomes the emperor for everyone. And during this particular time, this rascal who was the cousin of Krishna, named Shishupal, becomes killed by Krishna. That's an interesting story because Shishupal was born with four arms and three eyes. And it was predicted that whoever caused the extra two arms to disappear, the extra eye to disappear, would be the one who killed him later on. And when Krishna picked up this little baby, that's what happened. So Shishupal's mother made Krishna promise that he would not kill Shishupal. And Krishna said, all right, I won't kill him unless he makes 100 offenses. So during this Rajasuya sacrifice, Shishupal was making 100 offenses and Krishna was counting down from 99, 98. When he reached the 100th offense, Krishna killed him. After the Rajasuya sacrifice, Duryodhana was insulted because he fell into water, which he thought was land, ran into a doorway, which he thought was an open space, And everyone was laughing at him, and he became so insulted that he became determined to insult the Pandavas and arranged, with the help of Uncle Shakuni, a gambling match in which the Pandavas lost everything and even lost their wife. And then the crews attempted, especially Dushyanta, attempted to disrobe Draupadi, and Krishna provided unlimited cloth, so Draupadi was saved at that particular juncture. After this, Bhima vows to kill Duryodhana, and it was decided, because there was one more gambling match after this, it was like winner takes all, that if they lost, they would go into exile for 13 years, actually 12 years of regular exile and 1 year of incognito exile. So this is the Shabda Parva. Then Vana, which means the forest. In the forest, Parva, it's actually Parva, not Para. You have the story of Shikhandi. Shikhandi was Amba in his or her past life. I can tell that story real quickly because we didn't tell it yesterday. So Amba had vowed to be the cause of death of Grandfather Bhishma. Well, she couldn't do that in that particular lifetime, so she had to leave her body, get the mercy of Lord Shiva. And she was born as the daughter of Drupada. So she was Drupada's daughter, and, whoops, what happened here? Okay. She was, this computer has a mind of its own. So the Drupada's daughter, but Drupada thought that she was a boy. Why do you think she was a boy? Because Lord Shiva said that this is a boy. So he had great faith in Lord Shiva, and he believed that she was a boy, and he arranged a marriage of her with another girl, thinking that she was a boy. Hare Krishna. So marriage was arranged. And during the marriage, the other girl decided that she had married a girl instead of a boy. And her father, who was also a king, became very angry, wanted to attack Drupada. And so Shikhandini, which was her female, went into the woods to escape because thinking that this was all her fault. She ran into a Rakshasa, Stuva something, and the Rakshasa, feeling very much compassion upon her, exchanged his masculinity with her femininity. So she became a man, Shikhandi. And the Rakshasa said, well, you can be a man for as long as it takes to actually rectify this whole situation, but, you know, after a few days, you got to come back. Give me back my masculinity. But in the meantime, this Yaksha had a visit from Kuvera, and Kuvera got so angry that this Yaksha friend had transformed himself into a woman, he cursed this Yaksha to remain a woman as long as Shikhandi remained alive. So Shikhandi was born as a woman, but for all intents and purposes was a man, and Grandfather Bhishma knew this too. That's why Shikhandi could fight in the Battle of Kurukshetra. So, that's the Shikhandi story. And the reason we're telling the story of Shikhandi is because Grandfather Bhishma knew that Shikhandi was born as a woman, and he had the ethics or morality of never shooting an arrow at a woman. So later on, Arjuna was able to use Shikhandi as a human shield to cause Grandfather Bhishma to put down his weapons so Arjuna could fill Grandfather Bhishma with the arrows. Then also in this Parva, the Pandavas get tested by Durvasa, which we talked about yesterday. Arjuna goes to the heavenly planets and learns dancing, and he gets cursed by Urvasi because Urvasi wants to have a relationship with him, but he understands she is his great-great-great-great-great-great-grandmother, and so he calls her Mataji. She gets angry. You're going to be a eunuch, and Indra says you could be a eunuch for 1 year, and that'll help you in the incognito year. And then Bhima gets blessed by Hanuman to have great powers, and also Hanuman says he's going to become the flag of Arjuna, which we mentioned yesterday. Sorry about that. Duryodhana gets captured by the Gandharvas and Arjuna frees him. And then right before the incognito exile, Jayadrath tries to kidnap Draupadi, but the Pandavas capture Jayadrath and give him 5 little tufts of hair. So later on, during the Battle of Kurukshetra, Jayadrath tries to get even. And actually, he has a benediction from Lord Shiva that he could defeat 4 of the Pandavas for one day. So, and then the Pandavas, during their year of exile, this is the Virat Aparva, hide in Virat, and the Pandavas become Kanka, Balava. Balava is Bhimsen, Rihanala, who is the eunuch, Arjuna, Rishtanami, and Grantika, Nakul and Sahadev, and Sarindri means a hairdresser, and that's Draupadi. So right at the end of this whole year of incognito exile, the crew is in order to come across the Pandavas and ruin their last year of incognito exile, because they'll have to go into another 13 years. They attack the kingdom of Virat, and Arjuna defeats them just after the sun sets and the exile is over. And then they arrange Abhimanyu's marriage with Uttara. So who is Uttara? Uttara is the daughter of the king of Virat, and Uttara is also the mother of Parikshit. Later on, she becomes the mother of Parikshit. And Abhimanyu is the son of Arjuna and Subhadra, Krishna's sister. So that's Virat Parva. In the Udyoga Parva, Vidura is insulted because he actually gives good advice to Dhritarashtra, and Duryodhana insults him, so Vidura goes on pilgrimage, and he's not present during the whole year of the Mahabharata war. Sanjaya is sent as a peace envoy. Sanjaya is the secretary of Dhritarashtra, and later on Krishna comes as a peace envoy to the Kurus, and the Kurus, especially Duryodhana, try to capture Krishna, and they refuse to give the Pandavas as much land as would fit on the head of a pin. And then Krishna and Kunti appeal to Karna to switch sides and join with their brothers, with his brothers, and Karna refuses because he feels indebted to Duryodhana. Then there's the Battle of Kurukshetra, beginning of the Battle of Kurukshetra, and Sanjaya is given spiritual vision so he can see everything that is going on, including the Bhagavad Gita discussion between Krishna and Arjuna. Okay, and this is where we left off yesterday. So now we get into the battle. The Bhishma Parva. Bhishma is appointed as a commander of the Kurus. The Bhagavad Gita is spoken. Bhishma orders the Pandavas to fight and kill him. And there's a lot of other things that happened before this that Bhishma, at one particular point, vows to fight so strenuously that either he'll kill Arjuna or Krishna will have to break his promise not to fight in the Battle of Kurukshetra. So Krishna breaks his promise, grabs a chariot wheel, rushes at Bhishma. Arjuna stops him from killing Bhishma. And then Arjuna vows to fight seriously, and ultimately Arjuna uses Shikhandi, who we mentioned before was a woman in his past life, who now is a man, as a human shield. So Bhishma puts down all of his bows and arrows, and Arjuna fills Grandfather Bhishma with arrows. I described that there's so many arrows in Grandfather Bhishma's body, you cannot even put a finger width between the arrows. Of course, there's none in the head. And so Bhishma is lying on this bed of arrows, and Arjuna arranges for the celestial Ganges to quench the thirst of Bhishma, because Arjuna fires into the ground and the Ganges comes out of the ground. And Arjuna also arranges for a nice pillow made of arrows to be under Bhishma's head as he's lying on his back on this bed of arrows. It's actually a really traumatic description of Grandfather Bhishma's lying there. And Grandfather Bhishma, as we mentioned yesterday, is the benediction of not dying unless he actually wants to die. His father gave him that benediction because he arranged the marriage of his father with Sachavati. And so Grandfather Bhishma doesn't leave his body then for several reasons. One reason is that he wants to see the Pandavas win before he leaves his body. Another reason is he wants to leave his body during an auspicious time after the winter solstice, when the sun starts to go to the north again. That's after about December 23rd or so. The sun starts to go to the north. So anyway, so Grandfather Bhishma eventually leaves his body, but actually after the Battle of Kurukshetra, which we're going to describe in a second. So then there's the Drona Parva, where Drona becomes the commander because Bhishma is actually incapacitated, lying on his back. And Krishna wants to kill Dronacharya, but Dronacharya can't be killed under any ordinary circumstances, even though Drishtadyumna is supposed to be the one who kills Dronacharya. But even Drishtadyumna is not capable of killing Dronacharya. But Dronacharya is only capable of being incapacitated when he puts down his weapons. And the only way he's going to put down his weapons is if he thinks his son, Ashwatthama, is dead. So Krishna tells Yudhisthira to lie and say that Ashwatthama is dead. But Yudhisthira, being a very devoted to truth-telling, says, I'm not going to lie, Krishna. Even if you tell me to lie, I'm not going to lie. So Krishna thinks of a ruse. He says to Bhim, saying, you kill that elephant over there, and that elephant's name is Ashwatthama. So Yudhisthira, you can now say that Ashwatthama is dead, because everybody would believe Yudhisthira, because Yudhisthira never told a lie. So Yudhisthira yells out, Ashwatthama, and in a very low voice, he says, the elephant is dead. And Dronacharya becomes so depressed, he puts down all of his weapons, lies down in a yoga position, or sits down in a yoga position. Drishtadyumna comes out, and he chops off the head of Dronacharya. So Dronacharya is killed. So you see, Krishna is actually employing what would be considered improper tactics, but to accomplish something that's dharmic. And that's called consequentialism, that you can judge the ethical nature or moral nature of an act by the consequences. Then you get to the Karna Parva. Karna, as we mentioned before, is the first son of Kunti. And he knows it at this particular point. And he's actually promised Kunti that he's going to arrange for five of the sons of the Pandavas to be alive, because he's actually the sixth son. So his intention is to kill Arjuna. So Karna is appointed as a general. And then what happens is that Karna has this curse that was given to him by his spiritual master. Actually, two curses. One by his spiritual master and one by the earth or cow. So the curse by his spiritual master was that Karna would forget all of his mantras and the weapons when it was time for him to die at the final battle. And the curse from the earth was that, or the cow that he killed, was that the time of the final battle, his chariot wheel would sink into the ground and his chariot would not be able to move. The reason he was cursed by the cow is he killed the cow. The reason he was cursed by his spiritual master is that he was pretending to be a Brahmin, and his spiritual master, Parashuram, hated Brahmins, and he discovered Karna was not a Brahmin, Karna was a Kshatriya. When Karna was able to tolerate this like horrendous insect burrowing into his body. So Karna, when he was trying to pick the wheel of his chariot up, and he couldn't remember his weapons, was killed by an arrow from Arjuna. That was improper too, but Krishna encouraged Arjuna. Arjuna didn't want to do it. And Krishna kept saying to Arjuna, remember what he did. Remember how he defiled and said that Draupadi was a prostitute. Don't ever forget that. And Arjuna got more and more fired up and killed Karna. And then Dushasana was killed by Bhima. Now, Bhima had taken the vow, as we mentioned yesterday, to not only kill Dushasana, but to take the blood from his chest and drink it. And take the blood from his chest and put it on Draupadi's hair. And Draupadi, I mean, these were tough people here. You know. So, anyway, So, because Dushasan was the one who had dragged Draupadi and attempted to disrobe her at the behest of his brother, Duryodhana. So Dushasan is finally killed by Bhima. Bhima, in fact, is killing all the Kurus, all 100 Kuru brothers. He had taken that vow to be the cause of the death of all of them. So the other Pandavas didn't really touch the other Kurus. They left them all up to Bhima. Then you get to Shalya. Shalya is actually the uncle of the Pandavas. But Shalya was tricked. I don't have time to tell that story. But Shalya was tricked to take the wrong side in the battle of Kurukshetra. So he's appointed as the next commander. The last day of the battle. And what happens is Bhima, during this last day, Shalya is also killed by either Nakula or Sahadev. And the last day, the Bhima is fighting with Duryodhana. Well, actually, after the battle, it's basically only Duryodhana and, you know, one or two or three other people. You know, Ashwatthama is left, and Kripa. And other people, you know, a few people are left. So what happens is that Bhima finds Duryodhana. Duryodhana is depressed, meditating in the water, and he challenges him to a fight. And there's an interesting scene here that Gandhari, the mother of Duryodhana, attempts to give Duryodhana a iron hard body, make him like Superman, basically, because she has performed this austerity of binding her eyes for her whole life to be chaste to her husband, and she understands that when she takes away the bandage or whatever was binding her eyes and looks at Duryodhana's body, Duryodhana's body will become impenetrable, like a rock or steel or something like that. So she tells Duryodhana, please come and see me, but without your clothes. And Krishna knows what's going on, so he sort of interferes. He sees Duryodhana going to see his mother, and he says to Duryodhana, what are you going dressed like that or undressed like that? And Duryodhana says, this is what my mother requested. And then Krishna says, well, at least you should wear like a fig leaf or some leaf around your midriff. And so Duryodhana, taking Krishna's advice, puts it around his midriff, and Gandhari looks at Duryodhana and sees his whole body except for the midriff, and therefore, that's the vulnerable part of Duryodhana's body. But Duryodhana is not too worried about that, because basically, when you're fighting with a club, you're not supposed to hit someone below the belt, around the thighs. And so Bhima is fighting with Duryodhana, and the rest of Duryodhana's body is completely impenetrable and vulnerable. And Bhima keeps hitting him, and nothing happens, and nothing happens, and nothing happens the whole time. And Bhima doesn't know what to do. And finally, Krishna motions to Bhima, you should hit him below the belt. Krishna slaps his own thigh, and Bhima hits Duryodhana with his club on the thigh and breaks Duryodhana's thighs, and Duryodhana is left there writhing in pain. Balaram sees this whole thing, gets ready to kill Bhima for fighting in Prabhupada. So this happens in the Balyaparva. And then the Soptika Parva, then Ashvatam, Kripa, and Kritavarma. Kripa, not creepy. Kripa is sister. And Kritavarma kill the remaining Pandava army in the night. The Pandavas are in their camp, and the Pandavas' children get killed, the five sleeping sons of the Pandavas. Drishtadyumna gets killed, and so many other people get killed, except for the Pandavas, the five Pandavas who were not there at that particular point. Then there's the Stri Parva. Stri refers to the late. In this particular section, the women of both families are lamenting because they've lost their husbands, their fathers, their protectors. Gandhari gets really upset and blames everything on Krishna. Wow. Actually, she gets upset with Yudhisthira too. And so Yudhisthira's beautiful toes and beautiful toenails that he has sort of like curled up and become like claws instead of ugly at this point. And Gandhari blames Krishna for everything, so she curses Krishna. That is something like 30 some odd years after the battle, Kurukshetra, his family, that is Krishna's family, Yadav dynasty, will kill each other too. And that eventually happens. That story is there in the Bhagavatam and also in other Vedic literatures like the Mahabharata. What happens eventually is that Krishna's family, at least the men, they get drunk on rice wine, and they have these sticks and that are like iron rods or they grew out of the ground, and they beat each other to death. So that's because of Gandhara's curse, which Krishna wanted. Because he wanted to get rid of his family. Why did he want to get rid of his family? Because everything was accomplished. What do I mean everything was accomplished? The reason this whole battle of Kurukshetra was fought was to get rid of the demons, and therefore Krishna's family, which were demigods and powerful personalities, had to be brought down to the earth. So the culmination of Purachanaya Sadhanam, and especially Vinashaya Chadushkritam, that means getting rid of the miscreants, occurs during the battle of Kurukshetra. So Gandhari curses Krishna. And Shantiparva is the longest book of the Mahabharata. So this details the crowning of Yudhisthira, and then Bhishma is still lying there on the bed of arrows. And he gives instructions to Yudhisthira how to be a king. Why he should become a king? Because Yudhisthira doesn't even want to become a king or emperor at this particular point, because he feels guilty. He says, just for the sake of this kingdom, I've gotten this. And so he gets a chance to get instructions from Grandfather Bhishma how to proper carry out his duties as being a king, as well as why he should be the king. And within this, Shantipur is the Vishnu Sahasranam, Shiva Sahasranam, and some more spiritual instructions. And Anushasana Parva is also similar in the book of instructions from Bhishma. These two parts are the largest parts of the Mahabharata. And Ashwamedha Parva is when Yudhisthira performs the Ashwamedha sacrifice. This is after he's the emperor again. And it's a world conquest by Arjuna. Arjuna actually collects the wealth for the sacrifice because there's no wealth left over after the battle of Kurukshetra because everything's been destroyed. So he finds a sacrifice. Arjuna finds a sacrifice that was done many years ago where the Brahmins left all the wealth because they were given so much wealth there wasn't anything left over. Therefore, Arjuna has the name Dhananjaya, collector of wealth. And then you have the Ashvamavasika Parva, where you have, because Vidura comes back to encourage Dhritarashtra, Gandhari, and Kunti to go with him into the forest to actually take Vanaprastha to get ready for leaving this world. So Dhritarashtra burns up in a fire with Gandhari and Kunti, and Vidura leaves this world too in the forest and goes back to his original position as Yamaraj. And Dhritarashtra does not go back to home, back to Godhead, because he's committed too many offenses at this particular point. And then the Moshala Parva, where the Yadava dynasty self-destructs, that means they kill each other, they get intoxicated. There's a whole story how they got cursed because of the children of the Yadava dynasty teasing the sages. And that story is in the Srimad Bhagavatam also. And so that's the Yadava dynasty self-destructs. And then see how large it is? Then there's the Mahaprasthanika Parva, in which the Pandavas head off. They renounce everything because they've understood that Krishna has left the planet, and they leave everything in the hands of Parikshit, who is their descendant. And the Pandavas head north, and each one falls except for Yudhisthira, which is really interesting. And they each fall because of a particular fault, like Bhim saying, ate too much. Arjuna didn't defeat his enemy one particular day. It was either Nakula or Sahadeva who was bragging that they were the most handsome person. And Draupadi fell because she favored Arjuna more than the other husbands. And so Yudhisthira was left. And he enters into the final regions. What happens is that there's only a dog following Yudhisthira. And Indra comes down and says to Yudhisthira, you can go to heaven. And Yudhisthira says, I'll go only if my dog can go with me. And Indra says, dogs don't go to heaven. So Yudhisthira says, I've given shelter to this dog, so unless the dog goes, I'm not going to heaven. And so then the dog is revealed as Yamaraj. They take him to heaven, and then in heaven, he sees Duryodhana and company enjoying life. And he doesn't see his brothers, and he says, where are my brothers? And they say, well, we can take you to where your brothers are. So they go long distance away to basically what's hell. And he hears the voices of his brothers. And his brothers are being tortured, and they say, is that you, Yudhisthira? Oh, we feel so good that you're here. And then the guard who brought Yudhisthira down to the hellish region says, all right, now you can go back to heaven. And Yudhisthira says something very wonderful, showing the love from for his brothers. He says, if I'm with my brothers, then hell is heaven, and without my brothers, heaven is hell. It shows love. Actually, it's a really important statement by Yudhisthira at the end. And then he and the brothers end up in heaven. Of course, we know they're pure devotees, so these are expansions that are in heaven. And it's described that all the Kshatriyas, because they've done so many sinful things, like sometimes they have to kill animals and do other things, have to see hell when they leave this material world. So that is the summary of the Mahabharata. Wow. And we did pretty good as far as time frame is concerned. So let us take some questions about the Mahabharata. So you read the whole Mahabharata sometime. It's a very interesting. There's 80, I think it's about 84 different versions of the Mahabharata. They all basically have the same story. There's some differences. For example, in the North Indian version of the Mahabharata, you have, as I mentioned yesterday, you have Parashara Muni having a relationship with Satyavati in the middle of the river, and then Vyasadeva is born. That's why it's called Krishna Dwaipayana Vyas. He's born on an island. And in the South Indian version of the Mahabharata, you have Parashara Muni and Satyavati having a regular old marriage, getting married, and Vyasadeva is born. But, you know, there's some little details like that. But South India, they're definitely a lot more conservative than in North India. So that's a basic summary of the Mahabharata, and I thought that would be interesting. Following the Gita Jayanti celebration, we talked about some of the stories from the Mahabharata yesterday, and we encourage you all to read the Srimad Bhagavatam, which has a lot of stories from the Mahabharata, and then ultimately, when you have time, you can read the whole Mahabharata. The movies of the Mahabharata that are out are extremely inaccurate as far as depicting the details of the story. The edition of the Mahabharata that's most accurate is the Ganguly edition of the Mahabharata, which is the one I make reference to. So, who wants to ask a question now? We covered a lot. All right, Rakesh, you have a question.
Yes, Gurudev, thank you. Please accept my humble obeisance. Gurudev, how come Duryodhana is in the heaven?
Duryodhana, it's described, at least the Ganguly edition of the Mahabharata, that Duryodhana and Shakuni are Kali and Dwarpa. They're considered the worst of the demigods. This is at least in the Ganguly edition. In other words, Duryodhana and Shakuni had the service of stirring things up so that millions of Kshatriyas could be killed simultaneously. Now, why did Krishna want millions of Kshatriyas killed simultaneously? Because, as in the eighth canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam, there's a description of all the demons being harassed, killed, defeated by the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So they had to go somewhere, and what happened is they went down, as I mentioned last night, if you were listening, they went down to the Earth planet and took birth in the Earth planet, or on the Earth planet, and so they had to be wiped out. Sometimes the demons try to escape from the demigods. Another time, there's a story, this is actually a story in the Mahabharata and also in the Ramayana, that the demons took shelter in the ocean. And the demigods had a lot of trouble going into the ocean because Agni Dev, you know, can't stand water for obvious reasons. So they called for this one sage, Agastya, to take a big drink. And he took care, I'm going to mute whoever's making noise. Okay. He took care of the whole ocean, and later on that ocean was filled with the Ganges water. But that's a story in the Bhagavatam, and it's also in the Mahabharata and Ramayana. Ramayana goes into that story in greater depth. So, so the demons are continually struggling with the demigods, and at this particular juncture, right before the Mahabharata, or during the Mahabharata period, the demons took birth in king families, Kshatriya families on the earth planet. It's mentioned in the Vedic literatures that in Kali Yuga, many demons will take birth in Brahmin families. Doesn't mean that every Brahmin is a demon, but it means that some Brahmins are actually demons, and that's why they took birth in Brahmin families. And that's why there's so much impersonalism and voidism nowadays. Nivrshesha Shunyavadi Paschacha Deja Tarni. But Srila Prabhupada came to this Western world to drive this philosophy or the philosophies of impersonalism and voidism away. So, that's why. So they had a mission. Duryodhan was doing his duty. If it hadn't been for Duryodhana, there wouldn't be a battle of Kurukshetra. If it hadn't been for Shakuni, there wouldn't be a battle of Kurukshetra. And how is Krishna going to do Vinashaya Chadushkritam in an efficient way? Efficient means millions killed in a few days. You know, that's war is a very efficient way. Oh, I hate to say this, reducing the population. But anyway, war is a very efficient way of getting rid of people. What can I say? And in those days, well, another thing you should understand, in those days, the wars were not fought in the cities like they are now. If you read about or hear about or see films of World War II and World War I, there's all sorts of devastations. Ordinary citizens are being bombed. I mean, there's Blitzkrieg. There's the atom bomb that was set off over Hiroshima and Nagasaki. It killed so many ordinary people. But in the Mahabharata times, people were chivalrous. So you had Kshatriyas fighting with other Kshatriyas. And they wouldn't have a woman on the battle of Kurukshetra. Of course, there was Shikhandi, but Shikhandi was actually a woman who was turned into a man, but that's another subject matter. So things were rather chivalrous. And also at night, the participants in the battle of Kurukshetra would sometimes meet with each other. There's this whole story where Duryodhana went to Grandfather Bhishma and said, "You're not fighting very seriously." And Grandfather Bhishma, feeling like his honor was being challenged, he took out 5 arrows and he says, "I vow that tomorrow these 5 arrows will kill the 5 Pandavas. So what happened is that Duryodhana was thinking, I better safeguard these 5 arrows and give them to Grandfather Bhishma at the right time. So he took the 5 arrows, kept them with him. Then Krishna, understanding what was going to happen, brought Arjuna to see Duryodhana in the evening when they weren't fighting. Someone else is not muted. Okay. Someone else. Well, I can tell, actually. I have a fancy way of telling. Okay. So, that's Hrishikesh. Okay. I just muted him. So what happened is that Krishna took Arjuna to meet with Duryodhana. And Arjuna said, "Oh, Duryodhana, I have a favor to ask from you." And Duryodhana said, "Whatever you want. I'll even give you back the kingdom if you want." And of course, he He understood Arjuna was not going to ask for the kingdom back because a kshatriya is not supposed to ask for charity. It's, you know, like death. It's not allowed for a kshatriya. So Arjuna said, no, I don't want the kingdom back. I just want those five arrows. And so he got those five arrows that were supposed to kill the five Pandavas. So Krishna was very, very tricky in that regard. But the whole, it was all planned by Krishna so that all these rascals could be killed pretty much within a few days. I wouldn't say simultaneously, but within a few days they could be killed. Krishna is very efficient. Mrityu sarva harashchaham, he's all devouring death, and also kalo asmi. And during the manifestation of the universal form, which is mentioned in the 11th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, we saw find everybody rushing into Krishna's mouths like moths rush into the flames. And Arjuna is understanding at that particular juncture that these people are already killed by Krishna's will, and that Arjuna is simply being asked to be an instrument for Krishna's desire, Krishna's plan. It's nice. I mean, I don't like killing, but anyway, it's Krishna's business. Vrichanaya Sadanam Vinashaya Chadushkritam. Okay, Rishikesh, I think Rishikesh or Bhai Chaitanya had a...
Yes, Hare Krishna Maharaj.
Hare Bhav.
Do you want me to go first or shall I ask? Shall I wait?
Why don't you go now? Yeah, why don't you go now?
Please accept my humble obeisances. Dandavat Pranam to you. It's a bit of a follow-up of that question, and I heard you earlier say that, you know, it's that when Gandhari was blaming Krishna for the whole thing, that this was Krishna's plan, you know, to get rid of all the demons or the miscreants through the Kurukshetra battle. So the question there is, if it was predestined to happen, you know, this whole thing about the free will and the choice, that, you know, he kept on going to Dhritarashtra and say, Dhritarashtra, you have the power to stop this war. You know, you should,
right.
You know, and so did he really? I mean, Dhritarashtra kept on blaming Providence. So just trying to understand, if you can elaborate on that, please.
Krishna would have had to figure out a different way of killing everybody. Certainly, he wasn't taking away Dhritarashtra's free will. Then Krishna would have, but Krishna knew which way Dhritarashtra. See, that we had a discussion before about Krishna's knowledge of everything past, present, and future, especially the future, whether that actually negates the idea of free will or free choice. I personally don't think it does, because Krishna can know which way you're going to use or which way you're going to exercise your free will. And just because Krishna knows which way you're going to choose doesn't mean that you're forced. It means that you're actually choosing. God, I mean, God has to know everything, you know, past, present, and future. And that statement is there many times. In the beginning, you find that statement. Krishna knows everything, past, present, and future. In so many places. Otherwise, he wouldn't be God. If he was actually devoid of some type of knowledge, we wouldn't say that he was God. So, but Krishna did give Arjuna the choice, for sure, of being his instrument. Because Krishna, if Arjuna had chosen not to fight, Krishna would have had some other arrangement. Because Krishna actually says that, you know, that just be my instrument. You know, so because Arjuna chose to fight. I mean, it's just like, all right, let me give the example of Srila Prabhupada, where Lord Chaitanya predicts that in every town and village his name will be heard. So someone chose to do that, and that someone was Prabhupada. I often say, using an expression from the movies, that Prabhupada was the one because he chose to be the one. And had he, how did he choose to be the one? by being dedicated wholly and solely to his spiritual master's instructions. You know, that, and of course, Prabhupada, yes, of course, Prabhupada descended from the spiritual world. He was sent for this specific purpose. But really, because Prabhupada chose to follow his spiritual master's order in spite of all the impediments that were there, that shows us that we all have the opportunity to become empowered if we choose to follow in faith Krishna's order and the order of the spiritual master. In fact, in the Bhagavatam, we have this Yasha Devi Parabhaktirita Tevi Tatakuru Kashaite Katikari Artha Prakashante Mahatmana. That if one has full faith in the order, in the words of the spiritual master, if one has full faith in the words of the spiritual master and the words of the Vedic literature, then everything is revealed. So Prana Govinda sent this quote from the Bhagavad Gita. Oh, Arjuna is the supreme personality of Godhead. I know everything that has happened in the past, all that is happening in the present, and all things that are yet to come. I also know all living entities, but me, no one knows. That's God.
So he doesn't interfere. He doesn't interfere with the personal choice. He just knows what's going to happen.
No, he gives the choice, but he knows how people are going to choose. But still, people choose. It's not that he makes them choose a specific way. That would be taking away free will if he made me choose. Like if Krishna's just going to make me choose after this class to eat a pakora or something like that. Which he won't. He better not, because it's not my diet. I get very angry with Krishna to make me eat a pakora. Sorry about that, Krishna. Who knows what may happen? There's no pakoras here, don't worry. So it's not that Krishna is forcing me to do something, but he knows. Someone else sent a message. Krishna chose to not send me a pakora. Thank God. So Krishna Priya says that. So we're choosing, and then Krishna knows which way we're going to choose. If he doesn't know which way we're going to choose, then he's not God. Or his statement in the Bhagavad Gita has no meaning, where Krishna says, and reading again from the Bhagavad Gita, Oh, Arjuna is the supreme personality of Godhead. I know everything that has happened in the past, all that's happened in the present, and all things that are yet to come. Yet to come means the future. Okay, one more question from Sumukha, and then we have to end.
Thank you, Guru Maharaj. Thank you very much for that. Hare Krishna.
Thank you, Abhay Chaitanya.
Please accept my humble obeisances, Gurudev. Yeah. Regarding, Pandavas, we know they were great devotees of Lord Krishna. But they surrendered to Krishna. They followed Krishna's instructions. They served Krishna. But in the end, they end up in heaven. They didn't go to Vaikuntha nor the spiritual world.
It's described that the Pandavas were like Devaki, Vasudev, their expansions of the Lord's eternal residence. Just like Krishna's in the spiritual world, and Krishna expands or appears in this world, but it's the same as in the spiritual world. It's also described that the demigods, in one sense, are expansions of the residents of Vaikuntha. The residents of Vaikuntha are expansions of those in Krishna Loka. So the Pandavas, like Arjuna, is always with Krishna. He is never separated from Krishna. But sometimes these pure devotees have these expansions of themselves, the demigod expansions of Vasudeva and Devaki. Expansions. Sometimes it's mentioned, like Garuda, for example, who is Lord Vishnu's carrier, is an expansion of a coward boy in Vrindavan. Mm-hmm. So These are like inconceivable things. These are eternal associates of Krishna. Yudhisthira, Nakula, Sahadev, Bhima, and Arjuna, they're eternal associates of Krishna. So, but their expansions could be in the heavenly planets. That's how it's usually explained.
Okay, another question, Gurudev. We know there were 8 Vasus and they were killed by Ganga Devi. 7 was killed, 8, the 8th one was left. So we know when the Vasus were killed, they went back to where they came from in the heavenly planets.
That's right.
And what happened to the 8th Vasu? Where did he go? He went back to heavenly planets or he went back to the spiritual world?
He went back to the heavenly... Well, he's a pure devotee also. Bhishma is a pure devotee of Krishna. So he went back to the spiritual world, but there's an expansion of his, which is a Vasu in the heavenly planets, which his name is Jao, who went back to the heavenly planets. You know, it's a little complicated thing when you have the eternal associates of the Lord expanding as demigods or expanding as personalities on this earth planet.
I understand that Krishna can take many millions of forms, many expansions. And what unlimited. About the unlimited? What about the jiva souls and this
the jiva soul, the jiva souls by Krishna's grace can expand themselves not unlimitedly, but to a greater extent than we can imagine. I don't know the number. It's not like the yogic expansions where your yogi can expand himself 9 times and television expansions. It's actually of a different category. But you find this all the time, that devotees can expand themselves or be in 2 places simultaneously or in power, or sometimes you'll find devotees in Chaitanya Leela that are considered, like Haridas Thakur is considered to be an expansion or incarnation of Lord Brahma as well as Prahlad Maharaj. So these descriptions are there. I mean, sometimes they're empowered expansions. In other words, someone can be empowered by Lord Nrsingadev or empowered by Prahlad Maharaj or empowered by Lord Brahma. And sometimes there the potency, there's different ways that people are considered expansions, incarnations, avatars. Again, I have to take shelter of that word, achincha. It's inconceivable because, I mean, I may talk about it theoretically, but, you know, as far as like practically understanding it, it's something that is beyond our realm of ability to understand. Okay?
Yes, sir.
All right, so we'll see everybody tomorrow. And for those of you in Fiji, Australia, New Zealand, happy Sunday. It's Boxing Day there, isn't it?
Yes. No, today is 27 here.
Oh, 27. So yesterday was Boxing Day.
Yes, yes, yes. So tomorrow is another holiday.
Today is Boxing Day in America, but we don't celebrate it. Oh, tomorrow's Boxing Day in America. Who knows? It's all Maya anyway. Okay. See, there's another quote here, just to verify what I said. Bhaktivinoda Thakur said in Jiva Dharma that we could be in 2 places, Krishna Leela and Gauranga Leela. And according to other literatures, a jiva soul can be more than 2 places. Like in the Brihad Bhagavatamrita, you have Narada Muni and many of the different levels in the spiritual levels and material levels. So this is inconceivable. Okay, all glories to Srila Prabhupada, Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. Hari Bol.